This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
It's just a fact. And in this case, the dead cat is the New York Jets. They fired their head coach. They demoted their offensive coordinator. And you've got a quarterback who I think advocated or cogitated at the very least for both of those moves to happen. It's an offense that's been struggling with a new coordinator, play caller, and a new head coach. I would expect the Jets, much like a dead cat, to bounce.
Wow.
I'm taking the Jets and the points. Carter, I said, cuckoo.
Whoa,
killed the music and brought the lock. Oh, you brought that.
Yeah, I did that.
Attaboy.
So Jets plus 1.5 is the pick.
Yes.
I have some news for you. That is the same pick that one Daryl the Guru Johnson has made. So this is making it very easy for everyone else
in
the
audience. That's my guru. In finance, a dead cat bounce is a small, brief recovery in the price of a declining stock.
Okay, so you're thinking a win for the Jets, and then they'll go back to their normal struggling ways?
Possibly, yeah. I do think that with a new play caller and a new head coach, there will be renewed vigor in the locker room. And so I'm playing on the dead cat bounce, and I think Buffalo, with their injury concerns, and I know that Cook is out.
Yeah, James Cook starting.
I alerted
back.
Mark Willard, my partner, and he has adjusted his fantasy lineup. So nice try, you guys, trying to subvert my my partner who's under the weather. I got your back, Mark Willard.
Who did he pick up?
Oh, he just put in Khalil Shakir, into his lineup because he had him in the flex spot.
That's smart managing right there for Mark Willard. Keep your
management.
Monday night guys in your flex.
There you go.
Give you all the flexibility you
just
need.
In case.
Mm-hmm.
Chestnut checkers, Chickering.
In this bit, if you are new to the bit, Dibs makes a pick, and everyone else bets against it. If you were to do that so far, you'd be even, because you are 9-9-1 on the season, Dibs.
So I'd be down because of the juice.
Down because of the juice.
I'd be down 0.9 units. But after today, I'm back, baby. I'm back. You take the Jets, and the points go...
That's
you. You found it.
That was me.
Again. Chickering is struggling in there.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, you got the buzzer. That's good.
That's all you need, really. You just need the buzzer. That's all you need for
anyway,
that
dead cat bounce.
All right. Jets plus a point and a half is the pick.
Thank you, yeah.
It feels like a weird line to me. I don't know.
It's a weird one, but yeah.
Lean into the weirdness, I suppose. Lean into the weirdness. Anyway, we were talking Niners, Chiefs, Brock Purdy, Patrick Mahomes, and I was telling you how, and you laid out a lot of really good points, Dibs, about how maybe just the overall construction of the Chiefs offense, especially given their recent injuries, kind of lends to what we're talking about with Patrick Mahomes and some of the analytics. Let me just talk to you about this here for a sec. Okay, first of all, One of the arguments used against Brock Purdy is all of his elite weapons, all the all-pros around him, the Yak Bros, right, with George Kittle and Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and Christian McCaffrey. They turn a 5-yard catch into a 20-yard game because they are elite after the catch with the ball in their hands. What if I told you that Brock Purdy is 31st in the NFL in percentage of his passing yards that come after the catch, which means, generally speaking, Niners receivers, Niners pass catchers, do not run with the ball in their hands. They catch the ball and they get tackled relatively quickly, or at least faster than almost any other team in the NFL. Who has the highest percentage of passing yards that come after the catch? That would be none other than Patrick Mahomes. How about average depth of target, Dibs, or air yards per attempt?
Yeah.
Essentially the same thing. Generally speaking, it means how far down the field is your quarterback throwing the ball before it gets caught, where it is targeted, where the receiver is when the ball gets to him. Brock Purdy is first among quarterbacks with at least 5 starts this year. Patrick Mahomes, lowest among all starters in terms of average depth of target of his throws. So not only are these arguments that are being used against Brock Purdy wrong and lazy, they are completely opposite of the truth. He is on the far other extreme of this, and it's kind of funny because every argument or those arguments used against Brock Purdy not only are wrong for him, but could be turned around and used accurately and correctly on Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes this season has been a check down, dink and dunk quarterback. Not that he can't throw the ball down the field. He certainly can. We've seen it over and over and over again. This year, he's been a dink and dunk quarterback, while Brock Purdy has aired the ball out unlike any other quarterback in the NFL.
No doubt. And you look at the personnel and you look at the success rate of what Kansas City's done, and you can understand it. And I'm looking at completed air yards per pass attempt, which is how far the ball travels when you actually complete it. Brock is number one and Mahomes is number 29. His completed air yards per attempt is 2.7. So that is the epitome of dink and dunk,
yeah,
which tells you that when he's throwing it and he's completing it, his average is about 3 yards. And he's getting a lot of yak, a lot of yards after the catch, much more than Brock Purdy, because when you throw the ball deep down the field, a lot of times those are catches that are either out of bounds by the sideline or caught and then tackled. So you don't have the same ability. So these offenses have kind of flip-flopped on what we all expected them to be or what the prevailing notion was about these offenses. And that makes me even more impressed by Patrick Mahomes than ever before, because I ran off the names of the guys he is either handing it to or throwing it to, and the majority of these guys are not legitimate frontline starters in the NFL. But
to be fair, he's not going to have Rashee Rice going forward, but he's essentially had Rashee Rice for every game leading up to this point. He got hurt midway through their last game, but has had him for basically the entire time that they've played together this season.
He's played 4 games, so 4 of the 5. Rashee Rice.
One. Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, he's got 29 targets, which in 4 games, 29 targets, not a lot. And it's because they're not throwing it that much. And Kelsey's got 31 targets, and Worthy's got 21. And other than that, Schuster with 12, Noah Gray, 11, Samaje Perine with 9. They aren't throwing the ball very often, and when they're running it, they're not running it that successfully. So this offense is really about, you know, getting field goals. They have a very good field goal kicker, and it's about avoiding mistakes if they can, although he does have 6 interceptions through the 5 games. This Kansas City offense kind of resembles, for me, a little bit like the Harbaugh 49ers, where you're trying to beat teams 13-12 if you can. And we all think about Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, and we think about a guy who's just back there slinging it. And that's not Kansas City. And it wasn't last year, which adds to the frustration over how you were unable to win the Super Bowl, because that was not the high-flying Kansas City team that beat you the first time in the Super Bowl, where, remember, it was like, God, you know, if we can just keep Mahomes off the field and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. And
he beat you deep once, and that was enough.
That was it. But, yeah. I mean, you did so well to keep him off the field until there was 6 minutes left, and they scored, and you gave it up, and they scored again, and you gave it up, and they scored again, and all of a sudden, you got run out of the building. This Kansas City team this year resembles last year's Kansas City team, which is a much more physical, grind you out kind of an offense and a defense.
And to be fair to them, they didn't want to have to do this.
Right.
They went out and they acquired Hollywood Brown this offseason. They have Rashee Rice, who was a rookie last year and was good down the stretch, but was looking to turn to a different level, and through his first four games he was awesome. I know we get caught up in the fantasy world. He was one of the top fantasy receivers, and with Mahomes throwing him the ball, he's just one of the best receivers, period, in the NFL. He gets hurt. Hollywood hasn't played a single snap and is already out for the season. You drafted Xavier Worthy, and now he's one of your only receivers still standing that was on the team in the preseason. So they didn't want to have to do this again, but it looks like they're going to have to do this again. And I get, and I see the texts coming in on the Comcast Business text line right now. The 510, Mahomes is getting it done with a lot less. Niners are built better. Also, their formula is different, but they're the best team in the league. They're doing it, and they're getting the job done with less, but let's not pretend that the 5-0 record means Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs' offense has been as impressive as Brock Purdy and the Niners' offense. If the Chiefs' defense was the Niners' defense, Dibs, I would venture a guess the Niners would probably be 6-0. Like, some of the reason why the Niners have lost a handful of their games hasn't been because of anything that the Niners have done offensively. We talk so much about red zone inefficiency and about some of their issues, and there are a lot of them, and I want to talk about them, but they still put up 32 points, 17 points, 24 points, 30 points, 23 points, 36 points. That's a good chunk of points through 6 weeks, despite the fact that you're without McCaffrey, despite that Debo missed a game, despite that George Kittle missed a game, and those three all missed the same game, by the way. The offense hasn't been problem number one for the 49ers this year, not by a stretch. It's just you haven't had complimentary football all the way around, and that's what's caused them the three losses.
Yeah, and you've had mistakes at critical times, and that's what's cost you those ball games against the Rams. You had 5 mistakes over the last 12 plays of the game. You had a moody missed field goal. You had a big punt return that you gave up. You had a 50-yard pass interference on Charvarius Mooney Ward, and all these plays collectively cost you a ball game. And you had Devondre Campbell commit a PI as well, and the Ward was a 50-yard pass play that he gave up, not a PI.
Yeah.
It was to Juju, or to a Tutu, I'm sorry, not Juju, but Tutu Atwell, and then the Campbell pass interference, you remember, which is what set up the field goal. So
yeah.
Complimentary football is one thing, but avoiding late-game mistakes is another, and Kansas City is the kind of team that you could, in theory, if you do it the Shanahan way, you get the ball in your first possession, you score a touchdown. And then you get the lead, you run the ball, you possess the ball, you control the clock, you win the game. That is the number one Shanahan blueprint. Unfortunately, against Kansas City in these big games, you've done it other than the last part of it, which is you win the game. You've gotten leads, you've controlled games, and then you haven't been able to get the knockout punch.
I also think part of this, and I don't want to dive too far into the X's and O's and all the numbers, and I know we're still 6 days away from the game, and you might think me giving out these Purdy numbers and he's slinging the ball down the field and his A-dot average depth of target, essentially it just means they're aggressively throwing the ball down the field. You might hear me talking about it and the way my tone is and think that's a good thing. Like, I want my teams and my quarterbacks to be doing it that way. Honestly, no. I don't think Brock Purdy should be leading the NFL in average depth of target or air yards per attempt or air yards per completion. That's difficult to do. Generally, if you're doing that, you're going to have a low completion percentage. You're also going to throw a decent amount of interceptions because it's not rocket science. The further you throw the ball, the more difficult throw it is. And what I thought the Niners did a lot better in the second half in Seattle was, or really the whole game in Seattle, was take the easy completions. Brock Purdy said it postgame on Thursday, Dibs. He said, well, I just had a plan. No matter what the Seahawks were doing, read, diagnosed what was happening, and took whatever they gave us. If they were doing X, I threw to Z. If they were doing Y, I threw to X, so on and so forth. And he did a really good job at that. He checked it down a little bit more. And I think that's where the Niners had kind of gotten a little bit out of their I don't know, mojo offensively. They were so aggressive throwing the ball early in the season and pushing the ball down the field and not looking for Kittle on a quick out, not looking for Jordan Mason or Kyle Juszczyk, who was involved in the passing game against the Seahawks. And it's part of the reason why Patrick Mahomes is up near 70% completion percentage, because he's throwing all those easy completions underneath, and I think the Niners need to be better at that. So this isn't just the deeper your targets are, the better, because that means you're going to complete passes that result in 20, 25, 30-yard gains. You also got to take what the defense is giving you, and at a certain point, defenses are going to adjust to all the deep shots you're taking, and there's going to be so much open underneath that the Niners up to this point hadn't really taken advantage of yet.
And I also think that from the Seattle game, they ran a lot more play action than they had in the past, and that's something that I certainly had been waiting for, and many fans have been waiting for, set up the run game, and then the pass comes off of the run game through play action, and I saw them run a lot more play action against Seattle, and they've been toward the bottom in terms of play action pass attempts this year, and that's exactly what you're talking about against Seattle, where it was a lot of shorter, intermediate, down-the-middle throws that was set up through the play action pass game, and you had Mason going early, and then he got hurt, and Garendo was effective, and you had Debo, and Taylor was effective running the ball, so you were able to do a lot of the play-action stuff off of that, and I would look for that to kind of be the blueprint against Kansas City going forward. We don't know officially who's going to be in or out at running back. You hope that Mason's able to play through it and be out there, but if he's not, Garendo sure looked effective, and Taylor has hadn't carried the ball at all this year, and he had some good, tough runs in that game, so no matter who it is personnel-wise, I would look for Shanahan to do more of that, of the play-action game again.
The play, you hit on something that I wanted to focus on as well. Play-action, I've been, for 5 weeks, been screaming, where the hell is the play-action, Dibs? Through 5 weeks, the 49ers had used play-action on only 17.6% of all dropbacks.
Wow.
Not all plays, but every time Brock Purdy drops back to pass, play action on 17.6% of those. That number was up to near 30%, Dibs, in week 6 against the Seahawks. And the numbers, while it is a relatively small sample size through just 6 weeks, the numbers are pretty stark. Brock Purdy, when throwing off of play action, 72% completion percentage. It's down near 64%, not with play action, so a difference of about 8%. He has not thrown an interception off of play action. He has thrown 4 without play action. And his quarterback passer rating goes from 133 down to 92.6.
Yeah.
From play action to not. I know that it's a small sample size, but largely the Niners' bread and butter has been make the defense think a run is coming, and then throw the ball. And they really haven't done a lot of that so far this year. It feels like, yeah. I mean, how many times did we talk about it when the Rams felt like they knew what was coming? And it happened on the other side of the ball, too, when Matt Stafford felt like he knew what the Niners' defense was doing. But also the same was true on the flip side. It felt like defenses knew what the Niners were going to be doing offensively. And that second half in Seattle felt like the first time in a while where Shanahan and the offense was mixing it up, and the Seahawks weren't really able to pinpoint what was coming on any given play.
Right, and I do think that it helps for Brock Purdy to get into a little bit more of a rhythm, because what I've seen this year is exactly what you laid out when you talked about the stats of the yards, the air yards, the intended air yards, and all the rest of it is Kyle Shanahan has encouraged him and designed plays for him to throw the ball down the field. They've pushed it down the field more than we ever saw Jimmy Garoppolo do.
By a mile,
because he didn't trust Jimmy Garoppolo. And even more than what we saw Brock Purdy do last year, because Brock is healthier, he has a better grasp of the offense, and now you're trying to push the envelope a little bit. And I think they lead the NFL in explosives, which are runs of more than 10 yards and passes of more than 20 yards. And a lot of that is because of Shanahan trusting Brock Purdy to push it down the field, but I felt like they've fallen a little bit too much in love with pushing the ball down the field.
I agree.
And Mark and I had this discussion last week, and he was giving me the look of like, do you hear what you're saying? Because all we've all said for years or months is like, throw it deep, run a 9 route, push it down the field, and now they're doing that a lot, and people like me are saying, stop throwing it down the field so much. How about a screen? How about a draw? How about play action? And I do think against Seattle, this is why I thought Shanahan had a tremendous game, is they mixed it up a lot. More play action, more quick throws to the middle, a couple of screens here and there, and I think against Kansas City, that's going to be critical because Kansas City does have such a good defense, especially their front.
There was one drive, I think it was in the first half, I think it was in the first quarter, and I could look up the game log and figure out exactly what it was.
Walk
the Niners had first and goal from the 10, I believe.
Yep.
And they ran it on first down.
Mason got
three yards. Yeah,
yep,
so then second and goal from the 7. And I think they lined up Mason in the shotgun. Then they motioned him out to the left.
Yep.
So they go empty. Second and goal from the 7.
Yeah.
Defense knows, okay, we're passing here. No matter what, we're passing
here. It's like you're reading my notes
right now. And they
11 personnel, and they go empty. One running back, one tight end.
And they throw it short left to Jordan Mason. I think Purdy was pressured. The throw was a little off.
I have here incomplete. Pooney beaten. Pooney was beaten on the play.
One of the few times
he got
beaten.
Guard, yeah. And he gave up a couple pressures, and this was one of them.
Purdy pressured, throw to Mason, incomplete. Now you have a third and goal from the 7, and now the defense knows, guess what, you have to throw it again. And they threw, and it was incomplete. Again, I forget who this one was targeting.
To Debo, and they went empty again.
Yeah.
11 personnel, one running back, one tight end. I'm going to get this out now before Greg Cosell on Wednesday tells me I'm wrong, which is coming, but they went 11 personnel empty, no running back with Brock Purdy, and it was Kyle Juszczyk was the running back.
Mm.
No Mason, no anybody else. It was Juszczyk and Kittle, and then they targeted Debo on 3rd and 7 out of an empty set. No good, and then they end up kicking the field goal.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. I know 3rd and 7 generally, and it's even more difficult in the red zone, but 3rd and 7 is usually always a passing down. But it was the 1st and 10 play, and it was the 2nd and 10 play, where you didn't have to necessarily make it so obvious what you were doing, and the 1st and goal from the 10 wasn't necessarily obvious, but a 1st down play, you're probably going to run the ball, and the defense could have probably assumed that, and they could have sold out for it, and they only allowed a gain of 3. And then on 2nd and goal from the 7, where you could do either, you have time and space and the wherewithal to do either, you go empty, and the defense says, well, okay, we know you're passing this ball, and it forces an incomplete. And I know it's difficult to kind of disguise when you don't have the ultimate weapon in disguise in Christian McCaffrey. And part of the Niners' issue has been when they get in those passing downs, you don't have to, but to help out your chances of completing a pass, you feel like you should take Jordan Mason out of the game and bring in Juszczyk because he's a much better pass catcher than Mason is. But by doing that, you're also telling the offense or telling the defense, we're passing. You're ready to defend a pass.
Yep.
We're not running. Who's going to run the ball here? Unless Debo comes in motion or lines up in the backfield, there's no one that's going to carry the ball. So that's been one of my major issues throughout the season with the 49ers. They have turned their offense very predictable. But the second half in Seattle, you saw more play action. You saw more passes on generally rushing downs. You saw more runs. I think there was like a 3rd and 7 draw, and they picked up the 1st down. There was more of that. And when you're facing off against the Chiefs, that defense and Steve Spagnuolo, who seems to generally have Shanahan's number, I think you're going to need more of that. It'll be hard without McCaffrey, no doubt, but you're going to need more, I think, creativity and kind of breaking trends to get stuff done against the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I do want to highlight the Arizona game, and I talked about this before, where it was 1st and goal at the 5, and they went with 2 running backs and 2 tight ends, 22 personnel, and they went empty, and they put Saubert all the way out to the wide side of the field, and Kittle was right in his normal spot, off the line a little bit in the slot, and they ran that quick little Kittle in cut, and it was boom, touchdown from the 5. That was a play that nobody saw coming with 2 running backs and 2 tight ends. Normally, you'd have the tight ends in tight and Juszczyk in front of Mason, and you'd run power football, but they spread it out wide out of that personnel group. I thought that was a very creative play call out of that personnel group, and I think that Shanahan, in the game against Seattle, did get a little bit more creative in the red zone, which is how they cashed in 3 more times in the second half in the red zone. But I'm with you on that first one where, you know, I even wrote it down. They went empty on 2nd and 7.
Made no sense.
Yeah, I'd like to see him, you know, maybe run it there for 2 or 3, and now it's 3rd and 4.
Or at the very least, just keep a running back in and make defense respect the threat of it.
No doubt. And you were mentioning the play action, and I'm looking at my notes. After, you know, Seattle punts, it's 3-0. You get the ball back, and it's play action to Debo, 76 yards for the touchdown.
Kind of an awkward play, but yeah, it was off play action.
Yeah, play action, and he throws it behind Debo on purpose because the safety's coming over late. If he leads Debo, Debo might not no longer be with us because that safety was coming full speed to knock his block off, yeah. But the throw was in a spot where Debo could go get it. Unlike DK Metcalf, who doesn't go back for the ball, Debo does, caught it and got the yak and took that one to the house.
I think the other thing that the play action specifically impacts, and it's probably why you see Purdy's numbers so much better off play action than not, is it's that the 49ers offense generally has been geared around attacking the middle of the field, Dibs. And maybe some of this is just kind of like left over from the Jimmy Garoppolo era because he was a little limited with what he could do. And maybe Shanahan kind of adjusted to that. But still, that's generally where Brock Purdy is at his best as well. Although we know he can make throws outside of the numbers. Like that first touchdown pass to George Kittle against the Seahawks. One of the best throws I've ever seen him make. And it was from the left hash, about the 17-yard line, all the way to the front right pylon on a line. Perfect throw. An incredible pass.
Yeah, to start the third quarter.
Yeah, yep. And that was the first red zone score they had of the night. Snapped the 0-for-2 beginning on red zone touchdown drives. So Purdy obviously can do that. But I think still where the Niner offense is at its best, Dibs, and where they will be challenged against the linebackers of the Chiefs is throwing to the middle part of the field. And what opens that up is the threat of the run game and using play action. Because what happens when the linebackers think a run is coming? Well, they kind of get sucked up to the line of scrimmage. It opens up the middle of the field, and suddenly you've got a lot of space there to throw to Ayuk, yep, to Debo, to Kittle, to Juwan, to whoever it is running across the middle of the field. But if you're going empty and you're trying to throw middle, you got those two linebackers hanging out in their zones 15 yards from the line of scrimmage, and it's harder to sneak those balls in there. So yep, I think that's also where it impacts. It opens up the middle part of the field, which generally is where Brock Purdy and the offense is at their best.
Yeah, Kittle and certainly Ayuk is so good at those in-breaking, yeah, routes. And Purdy has been just elite at getting that ball over the linebackers and in front of the safeties, especially as so many teams like to play that two-deep zone now. And there is area between the linebackers, especially if you have play action. You run a little play action, the linebackers do cheat up instinctively, and then there's room over there, over the top and in front of the safeties, and that's where Ayuk and Kittle have been so dangerous. And I'm just looking at some of these other plays and the play action back to back on that drive where they stalled out in the red zone. Mm. You got Ayuk for 16, Kittle for 3, back to back play actions. And, you know, it was definitely working. And Purdy out of that pistol with the quick fake, and then it's just boom, the ball's out. It takes the pressure off him and it helps the offense get in rhythm.
Yeah. And if your offensive line can hold the blocks for a little bit longer, then the play action can work. The 408 also saying, I read that play action does not allow Purdy time to read defense, and so they sometimes get away from it, especially earlier in the season. Yeah. I mean, you do need your offensive line to give the quarterback a little bit more time to allow the play to develop and allow the linebackers or whoever it is, a crashing corner, to think that the run is coming and allow the quarterback to stand in the pocket and deliver a throw that might take a little bit longer. So that is part of it as well. The offensive line, I thought against Seattle, was very good. That might be a little bit of a different challenge against the Chiefs. Like, if you just have Chris Jones getting past Pooney or McKivitz or whoever it is that he's going up against, and the Niners are carrying out a play-action fake, then Purdy turns around and he sees Chris Jones on top of him. Well, guess what? Play-action is not going to work there. So it is a lot of factors and characteristics and a lot of pieces that have to work together to make it work. But when they all work together, there's no other better formation set scheme for the Niners offense than play action. I mean, it's been their bread and butter for as long as Shanahan has been here.
Yep, and they have to be able to run the ball and they have to be able to establish it to make Kansas City respected. And I'm looking at the numbers and Kansas City is fourth in football in yards per attempt allowed on the ground, only 3.7 allowed. You've got Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Minnesota tied for second, and then Kansas City. And I think about that Minnesota game where running yards, rushing yards were a little hard to come by, and you know, you can't abandon the run, and Shanahan won't. He's really good at staying with it, but it brings me back to the question about J.P. Mason and what his status will be as we get deeper in the week. He's coming off of a shoulder injury, and you know, he had one carry in the third quarter coming out of the locker room, and I would imagine he got some treatment in the locker room, and he came out, he had 8 yards on that carry, and then that was it. He couldn't continue, and he ran out of bounds to the sideline, and then he didn't come back in the game. So if you don't have J.P. Mason, and I'm assuming that you probably won't.
Mm.
I don't know, and we'll get a medical opinion from Doc Pandya tomorrow, cleared to play UCSF medical, but based on the injury, you may want to give him another week, and if you can give him 2 weeks, then you get a third week because of the bye, and that might put a little bit of a extra pressure on Garendo, but also Debo Samuel as your as a possible wide back again.
Yeah, Shanahan does not talk today, will not talk tomorrow. It's a day off tomorrow. Shanahan will talk to the media on Wednesday, so that will be the next update we get from Shanahan himself on injuries. Obviously, Jordan Mason will be probably the one foremost front of mind. Also, right, the kicker, you got to figure out if he can go. I think since the Niners haven't made any moves yet to sign a new kicker, I would imagine they do expect Matthew Wright to be able to go, but who knows as the week goes along. Another one is Malik Mustafa, who did not play basically the entire second half in Seattle. You hope that he's good to go as well. I think Shanahan last week on Friday called them all day today at this point. We'll see how those do develop as this week moves
and
along.
Just reading a Mayoko tweet,
yeah.
Malik Mustafa, Jordan Elliott, Matthew Wright, and Jake Moody all not on the field today at practice.
Okay.
Jordan Mason was in a blue jersey, according to Matt Mayoko, which is the medical jersey, the MC Hammer can't touch this jersey,
yeah,
so to speak.
Exactly. And he has an AC joint injury, which is in his shoulder. So, and apparently it was too painful for him to continue playing on Thursday. He was the emergency running back if everyone else got hurt, and the Niners just needed someone in there to man one of the 11 spots. But it was too much for him on Thursday. So you'll see how he heals up and see if he's ready to go on Sunday against the Chiefs. Speaking of Malik Mustafa, though, and the Niners' defense, Dibs, something I was thinking about throughout the weekend and continuing to react to what happened on Thursday, it was the Niners' injuries defensively and how it led us to feel like maybe Thursday was going to be a shootout. And ultimately, what, 36-24, there were a lot of points scored in that football game. But as I was talking about earlier, kind of felt to me as if the 24 points the Seahawks scored were kind of fake points. They had the kickoff return for a touchdown. They had a touchdown drive where the Niners were perfectly content giving them 8 yards at a time underneath to kill some clock. I was very impressed by the Niners' defense, and that's without Talanoa Hufanga. That's without Mooney Ward. You're without Javon Hargrave up front. You've got a bunch of guys that you probably don't know a lot about filling in. And it brought up the question in my mind, Dibs. Let's assume for a second the Niner defense is entirely healthy. You have access to everybody. Obviously, that means Drake Greenlaw is going to be playing because Devondre Campbell has been bad so far this year. But say you got Hufanga healthy. Say you got Mooney Ward fully healthy. Say you got Isaac Yiadom healthy and everybody else. Who do you want starting defensively for the Niners? And I guess this is a question more so for the defensive backs, safeties, and corners, because everywhere else seems pretty straightforward. But who are you starting, Dibs? If Hufanga's healthy, you starting Hufanga over both Jair Brown and or Malik Mustafa? You starting Mustafa next to Jair Brown? You starting George Odom? The way Mustafa played on Thursday, Dibs, maybe makes it feel like you might just be giving him some of those reps, or maybe all the reps moving forward, and hope that he improves by the time the postseason comes along.
I'm going with Mustafa. I'm going with Malik Mustafa, and it's partly because I don't think that Hufanga is 100% healthy, and even when he returns from the latest injury, he still is coming off an ACL. So it's going to take time, as you know, the doctors, the real doctors, not the radio doctor like me, but real doctors will tell you that it's usually the year after the year where you return and you get back to where you were. And I just don't think that right now Talanoa Hufanga is playing well enough. And Malik Mustafa has been absolutely fantastic in a limited sample size. And Jair Brown's a guy you can't get off the field. And I'm looking at the snap counts. He's played in 99.45% of snaps this year. Jair Brown leads the team in snap count. And then D'Amador Lenore, and then your guy, Devondre Campbell, is third. Your guy, Devondre Campbell, 95%. But when you look in the secondary, Mustafa's now played in almost half the snaps, and I think that he's looked good enough to where it's not a demotion for Hufanga, but Right now, I'm going with the hot hand, and that's Mustafa.
I think at the very least, and the 262 texting about this as well, this team does not have the overall skill to start Hufanga right now. Such an undisciplined player on a team that desperately needs it. That's from the Comcast Business text line. I agree overall. At the very least, though, Dibs, even if Hufanga returns and he starts playing every down again, at the very least, what the emergence of Malik Mustafa does, also potentially what the emergence of Renardo Green does at corner, I think it means you're not signing Hufanga to another contract, and you're probably not signing Mooney Ward to the major contract that he's going to get from someone this coming offseason.
Well, you are signing Diomedo Lenore to the contract.
Yes.
So if you're going to pay one of them, you're paying Lenore, and you know Mooney Ward, if that's going to be the way that that goes, then unfortunately that's the cost of doing business, because you do have to remember that Brock Purdy is heading down the road towards $60 million, and everybody wants to talk about 50 or 55, and Dak got 60, so I think Brock is getting 60. And you are citing all the metrics and the numbers, advanced analytics about how good Brock has been, and I see it with the eye test, and Brock is that dude. And you found a franchise quarterback, and you're going to pay the franchise quarterback. So if he's getting $60 million, that's got to come from somewhere. And I do think that what they've done in this year's draft might actually be the thing that helps to prolong the Super Bowl window, because this year and last year, Jair Brown drafted last year in the third round. He's a real one. And this year, Renardo Green looks like he's a real player, and you hope that Pearsall can be. Cowing is already getting touches, and Garendo is a guy who can run. He can run the ball for you in the backfield. And so you start to look at your young players, your quote-unquote cheap labor on this team, you've got a lot of it with, you know, Green and Malik Mustafa as a player. So I think the more you look at this team going into the future, you're loving these draft picks. Dominic Pooney this year in the draft class. And if you can have seven guys of your starting 22 on rookie deals, well, then you can go out and pay your quarterback $60 million, and you can go out there and maybe bring in another edge rusher or bring in another top flight tackle for when Trent leaves. You can start to spend other money elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a necessity. I mean, we talked about it, you and Mark Willard and everybody else here on the station talked about how important this draft class is because of that contract that's coming up for Brock Purdy. You need to save money in certain spots if you're paying all that money to these other positions. And it seems like this draft class is taking steps in that direction to make it possible. I think the other thing, Dibs, and I don't mean to pile on Talanoa Hufanga. And by the way, hard to not see this right now. Looking at the ALCS broadcast on TBS, guess who's in attendance at the game? None other than Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift.
Oh,
they just showed them on TV on TBS. So the Swifties are invading the ALCS now as well, Dibs.
That's a bye week, so you know,
yeah, might as well enjoy yourself.
Got some free time off a bye, and I'm sure with her money, you hop on a jet. You can practice in Kansas City and jet on out there and jet back home in time for practice tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Not an issue, yeah.
Stay distracted, though, Travis. It's okay. Why don't you stay in New York for, like, another week and then...
Yeah, and I wonder why he didn't go see his brother, and I saw his brother on the other screen up here at the Bills-Jets game, also in New York.
Maybe they'll meet post-game.
Perhaps.
And have some fun. We'll see.
A little nosh in the post-game.
Maybe. But I also think, and I don't mean to jump on Talanoa Hufanga while he's out injured on IR again, I think there's a very real possibility, Dibs, that we look back on his injury as something that may ultimately help the Niners, not just in the future, but this season. And it's kind of similar to what happened last year, although no one thought it in the moment, and I still think throughout the postseason and into the Super Bowl, you probably didn't feel it. Although Jair Brown had an interception of Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl, you think back to all the reps and all the experience that Jair Brown got that he wouldn't have gotten if there wasn't that injury. And it might be the same thing for Malik Mustafa. He's going to be forced into action now with that safety spot opposite Jair Brown. And Dibs, by the time that Hufanga comes back, maybe Mustafa's good enough. The Niners say, all right, we're going to stick with you. And by the time the Super Bowl comes around, the postseason comes around, Mustafa is two times the player that he currently is because of all these reps.
Yep.
And suddenly you have put his development on a fast track because what was your other course of action? George Odom, who is really a special teams ace?
Exactly.
I mean, you could do that if you wanted, and they might. We'll see. But there is a real possibility where the reps that that Mustafa is forced to get now makes the Niners' defense better than they possibly could have been if Hufanga never got injured.
Yes, and if you can develop and win simultaneously, then you are serving both ends of a possible run where you're getting younger players experience while also winning.
What are you saying, two timelines?
I'm saying two timelines, baby. And two timelines works if you win and your younger players develop.
It's which is a hard thing to do.
It's easier in football when you're in a sport where you're kind of forced to do it. And we can look at, you know, players on the Golden State Warriors where you play five guys at a time and maybe you're going to play eight when you get into a deep run. And so those players don't really have a chance in a deep playoff run to develop. But when you've got 22 starters and you've got multiple guys who are out, then yeah, you get that chance. And makes me feel a little bit for D. Winters, who would be getting much more of a Jair Brown kind of a chance based on injury. You know, you've got Flanagan Fowles who's out and Dre Greenlaw is out. And so if D. Winters was 100% healthy, maybe he'd be getting the Devondre Campbell sort of percentage at linebacker, but he hasn't been healthy enough to really get that.
Yeah, and even when he's been in, he has struggled too. Hasn't looked great. Although when he first, which game was it? The Cardinals game? When he got in, I had to do like a triple take because he looks just like Dre Greenlaw.
Fast.
He looks like body type. He's physical and he's got the same size. He's obviously big and strong. Now I'm not saying he plays like Dre Greenlaw. He's nowhere near that. Dre Greenlaw is one of the best linebackers, making up the best linebacker duo in the NFL, and both he and Fred are healthy. But he does look like him, and it gives you some confidence. Maybe if he continues to develop, he can be something like that eventually. But you're right, hasn't been healthy, and even when he has been healthy, he hasn't played at his best yet. Not off to the best start for you, Dibs, here in this Monday Night Football game.
Not so far so good. We got points.
Jets down four.
Yeah, they scored. It's the dead cat bounce, you know? The dead cat will bounce. And the worst part is that Josh Allen scored the touchdown, and I'm going up against your guy, your roomie in fantasy. And he's got
E-Dog, huh?
Yeah, he's got Josh Allen as his quarterback. So I just need Josh Allen to be contained, and Dipper Claus can get to 4-2.
Well, you just need Josh Allen to not score like 50 points, right?
Even 40 would hurt.
You should be fine.
Hopefully, as long as we get some Garrett Wilson, like, here.
Although, hey, San Francisco native Ray Davis, like, 50 rushing yards on the first drive for the Buffalo Bills. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You pick him up, Carter? No, you didn't.
I called that, though, didn't I?
Yeah, you sure did. Anyway.
Would have been a last-second ad that could have helped your fantasy team, but alas, he'll be out there on the waivers. Someone else can pick him up later. All right, we got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this Monday edition of Willard and Dibs. Willard will be back tomorrow. It's been a pleasure being on with you, but we got one more segment to get to. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Willard and Dibs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And while you're there, be sure to check out how both the Morning Roast and Steiny and Guru reacted to Week 6 of the NFL season and began getting ready for Niners and Chiefs. More Willard and Dibs next on 95.7.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
you sit in traffic now. But later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things, like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
In the game.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs.
Can you sing with that voice?
Literally. I did Daddy Warbucks in middle school, and it was toxic.
What I'm telling you, not telling you about
why. See,
that's singing.
On 95.7 The Game.
I'm Steve Young and Willard and Willard and Dibbs. Mark Willard will be back tomorrow here on Willard and Dibbs.
Mark Willard.
Alongside Dibbs here on a Monday at 95.7 The Game. Your Jets have bounced back. Dibbs got in the end zone. That's kind of a twofer for you because the Jets score to help out your faded Dibbers pick.
Yep.
And the player that scored is on your fantasy team in a close match.
It gets no better than good old-fashioned dead cat bounce, as previously indicated. And the Jets marching down the field. And now we just need to keep Josh Allen at bay a little bit longer. Jets in the points. And I'm officially hot come tomorrow.
Stop it.
And then we turn our attention to Thursday Night Football. I don't even know who the matchup is. And then, of course, the pick will be in for Niners-Chiefs. And I've actually been thinking about that one a lot over the weekend, about Niners and Chiefs, Niners favored by a point, and Niners coming off a mini-bye, Chiefs off a maxi-bye, so the Chiefs with a rest advantage. But they have to travel, and all the history of the matchup. And this is one that is going to be a very difficult pick. For me, I've been, like, honestly, the Seattle one I thought was an easy pick based on, I know they both run a short week and all the rest of it, but the Niners are just flat better. Kansas City is an interesting team because their offense is not what we're used to it being. Their defense is very good. So I'll have to really look at some of the matchups, and it's going to come down to one main thing. Can the 49ers run the ball against Kansas City's very good run defense? And if it means it's Garendo and Taylor and a little bit of Debo against a very good front seven to Kansas City, that might be where this game is won or lost for the Niners.
Yeah, I know you guys will pick the brains of Greg Cosell about that very thing. You can also ask Steve Mariucci, who will join you guys on Wednesday live from John Madden's studio. That is coming up on Wednesday when you and Willard on Willard and Dibbs will be there as we remember the great John Madden. Members of the Madden family will be there along with Steve Mariucci, who will join the show and join you guys at 3 o'clock. So looking forward to that coming up later this week here on 95.7 The Game. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, the Jordan Mason injury is one to keep an eye on. In terms of the Thursday game this week, Dibs, it is Broncos and Saints, and depending on the Derek Carr situation, that could be rookie quarterback versus rookie quarterback. So have fun picking that one.
God.
That is a classic stay away or bet the under, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I think that Derek's going to probably miss that game based on what I was reading about his oblique injury.
Doesn't seem good.
No. And, you know, Rattler wasn't terrible. He wasn't the reason why they lost that game.
They put up some points, the Saints did.
And Tampa, is that offense for real? I mean, I know they're probably not that good, but that offense was just a machine through New Orleans.
Baker did throw three interceptions, didn't he? But he also threw four touchdowns.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like a classic Jameis Winston Bucks game. That one year when he threw 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions in the same season.
Yeah, I was watching that on Red Zone, so I didn't really get all the plays. Just it seemed like one of the teams was always in the red zone, and it was usually Tampa Bay, if memory serves.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield threw for 325 yards, four touchdowns, and three interceptions, and the Bucs put up 51 points.
Wow.
Yeah. Chris Godwin had 125 yards and a couple of touchdowns. I mean, their offense is legit. They've always kind of leaned on their defense. I don't think it's quite as good this year as it has been in the past. But they're legitimately a threat in the NFC. If I were to ask you this, Dibs, what team in the NFC should the Niners fear the most at this point? The Niners are 3-3, and maybe they're not even in position to be having this question asked of them. But which team should scare the Niners the most in the NFC, given everything, including injuries and all that?
I would say it's Detroit, just because of, you know, what they can do offensively. They're a very good running team. They're a good passing team with Jared Goff, and they have a coach who is straight out of the IDGAF manual. They go for it on fourth down and get it on fourth down more than any other team in football. And I know that last year it seemed like that reared its ugly head for Detroit, and that's maybe why they lost. But on one of those fourth down conversions, they had, was it Reynolds who was open for Detroit, and he just flat dropped the ball?
I forget. Oh, yeah, it was.
And, you know, they went for it, and they didn't get it, and they should have, you know, maybe they shouldn't have gone for it, but they had a player open, and he just flat dropped it. Yeah. So I think that Detroit and his out-of-the-box approach to football, Dan Campbell, they, I think, are a dangerous team, especially if you end up having to go up there and play them in the playoffs in Detroit.
They're probably a team that the Niners will be fighting with to try to sign some defense or trade for some defensive linemen before the trade deadline, because now they're down Aiden Hutchinson, and that's already a relatively weak pass rush. Hutchinson kind of buoyed that entire unit, much like Nick Bosa does for the 49ers. They might be looking to go out and acquire some talent at that spot. The Niners should be doing the same thing, although they probably need more help on the interior than the edge rushers. But still, I think both of those teams will be active in that spot. The Hutchinson injury, Dibs, is a major one. I know you talked about earlier Dan Campbell saying he's not going to rule out Hutchinson returning at some point, but it seems very, very likely that his season is over. That defense looks a lot different without him, but they are an offense that could beat you without much of a defense. If they are clicking offensively, I know Jared Goff is not an elite quarterback, but the weapons that they have offensively, probably the best 1-2 punch of running backs in the NFL in Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, maybe one of the only other teams that can put up with them offensively, it might be the Green Bay Packers, Dibs, because they have weapons all over the place as well. Their weapons more so in the passing game, the young wide receivers to go with Jordan Love. But for me, I might pick the Packers. The Packers, the team that scares me the most in the NFC.
Yeah, those three teams you just mentioned are 2, 3, and 4 in yards per play offensively. Niners are 2, Detroit's 3, Packers are 4.
Pretty good.
Only Baltimore is above those three teams, but you get into a shootout kind of game with Detroit or Green Bay. We saw both of those last year in the playoffs, and the Niners had to dig deep in both in order to win it. And, you know, I think about an advantage over Green Bay more so than Detroit, because I think Detroit, their quarterback a little bit more established. Jordan Love is more prone to the mistake, I think, still in his young career. But all those matchups, we are going to get to see them play out in the regular season. They go to Green Bay, and then Detroit comes here. So those are going to be matchups you get to see this year.
Jordan Love looked elite against Arizona. 4 touchdowns, 258 yards. 22 of 32 passing. I know it's Arizona, but that's also the team that you just lost to. So, and they put up 34 points and only allowed 13. Kyler Murray couldn't do anything. James Conner, I mean, 7 carries for 24 yards in that game after they just ran all over the Niners in the second half. Packers are a young team, an exciting team. They're probably on, you know, they're improving as the week goes on. It's kind of funny how things play out, because I remember last year throughout the playoffs, you were, I think, most people rooting for the Packers to beat the Cowboys. You're rooting for the Buccaneers to beat the Eagles. You were rooting maybe for the Lions to make it to the NFC Championship game versus some of the other options. All those things happen, and now you look back on it now, and you might say, well, the Packers and the Lions might have been the second and third best teams in the conference anyway. So you still ended up playing probably who were the teams that were best besides you in the conference in the postseason.
And it will all play out in similar fashion this year. It's just interesting to me that the way it looks now, it seems like there's a couple of upstarts and party crashers that are better than you thought. Washington, certainly. I know it's only 6 games, but 4-2, and they're atop that division. Minnesota, I don't think, is going to run the table and stay undefeated for the entire season, but they already beat you. And then Tampa with Baker Mayfield, and, you know, Atlanta's a team that maybe was a quarterback away, and they seem to have their quarterback, and they're a team that can score with anybody. So it just feels like in the NFC, like, think about explosive offensive teams. Washington, they can explode on you now. Tampa, we've seen it. Atlanta can score big. Detroit, we've seen it. And the Niners might be, you know, a team built more like Kansas City, where they can score a lot of points, but they might be better suited to win a game where it's ball control and running it in a lower scoring game. I don't know.
And you hope that the defense allows you to do something like that. If you are able to play games like that, that means the defense probably has come a long way. You also hope that it means no special teams mistakes going forward. Circle the bye week, Dibs. Circle these next 2 games. If you have more special teams blunders, Brian Schneider will be fired during the bye week. But if
you, are you locking that up?
If you have blunders, special teams blunders through 2 weeks, they will make a change. If they don't make a change during the bye week, then they're not going to make a change for the rest of the year. Because if you're making a change like that, it's got to happen during the bye. So if you have 2 clean special teams games against the Chiefs and against the Cowboys, I think his job, Brian Schneider, the special teams coordinator, I think he's safe. But if you get a mistake or 2 in these next 2 games, I think we'll see a change come during the bye week before week 10.
It's possible. I'm just looking at Football Reference and expected points broken down by unit. The Niners offense has only 1 game negative in expected points, and that was the Arizona game, negative 0.37, so barely below the expectation. The defense has 4 games negative. The special teams has 4 games negative. So
out of 6, that's not great.
Right. And one of them was against the Jets. They were a plus 0.93 in that one.
Now, nothing really special happens special teams either way. Just Moody making field goals.
So there you go. I mean, New England, you were minus 16.28 in special teams. And last week, minus 7.06. With the kickoff return for a touchdown.
So we'll see. I mean, keep an eye on special teams the next 2 weeks, because I don't think you're going to want to make a change mid-season when you don't have the benefit of the bye week to kind of get things figured out. All right, Dibs. That'll do it for today. Willard will be back tomorrow. Fun as always. Yep. And we'll continue Chiefs week tomorrow.
Good stuff. And go Jets and go Mets.
Yes.
That's kind of where we are. The Mets already won, so just wanted to get a rhyme in there before we say goodbye. Yeah.
Yeah. Coming up next is Lucas Alexander was best of the game. Lucas, what are you leading off with? What do we got coming up next?
Frank Gore was on the morning roast this morning, and that is where we're going
to
start.
Okay. That's coming up next. It is brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. As on the way, Lucas Alexander will let you hear Frank Gore with Bonte and Shasky, although it was Lubman in for Bonte today. All right, that'll do it for us today. Thanks so much for tuning in, and Willard back tomorrow on 95.7 The Game.
Xfinity here. How can we help?
Hi. My daughter invited her entire class to her birthday party. Can my Wi-Fi handle it?
Oh, well, at Xfinity, our latest gateways have tri-band Wi-Fi technology, letting you connect hundreds of devices at once.
No way. So if all the kids are watching stuff on their phones, well, their parents are sharing videos online.
Yep, go ahead and watch videos. They can all do their thing and party their way. No problem.
Oh, we are gonna need a bigger cake.
Now through October 21st, get fast, reliable Xfinity Gig Internet for $20 a month for 2 years with no annual contract when you add Xfinity Mobile with unlimited data. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today. Xfinity, bring on the good stuff. Restrictions apply. Requires paperless plan and auto pay with stored bank account. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra. Gig Wi-Fi requires Xfinity Gateway. Xfinity Mobile requires Xfinity Internet. After promo, regular internet rates apply. Actual speeds vary.
This is a special alert to anyone owing the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes or with unfiled tax returns. Write this number down, 800-373-0322. The IRS has ended COVID forgiveness and they are cracking down. Call Tax Relief Helpers now to hear about our tax debt reduction programs. If you're facing liens, levies, an audit, wage garnishment, or already in a payment plan, we still can help you. You may qualify to have your tax debt settled for a mere fraction of what you owe or for other resolution programs. Tax Relief Helpers is tax agents available now for a free consultation. TRH has already helped thousands of taxpayers qualify for these generous relief programs, earning them an A rating with the Better Business Bureau. If you or your business owe 10 or even hundreds of thousands to the IRS, you don't have to be afraid anymore. Call our relief hotline now to see what savings you may qualify for at 800-373-0322. 800-373-0322. Once again, that's 800-373-0322.
I'm Bob Burke, founder and chairman of Burke America Parts Group, a family of brands that includes RepairClinic.com, an appliance and HVAC parts solution company that's grown into an international brand. Before AmericanEagle.com, we partially launched a new technology platform developed by another firm. American Eagle helped take our technology to a whole new level with digital marketing, software development, and business insights into our key...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.